The comments within the following podcast are those of any show hosts and not representative of any company in which the show hosts may represent.
Welcome to podcast number 310. My name is Jared Reimer, and I hope that you will enjoy this program as much as I have putting it together for you. Have you been deleted unfairly, either from a phone system, bulletin board, forum, blog? Is this a disability problem? 2019 Talk discusses this very aspect of bullying. And could it be that administrators of these types of services could bully people that they really do not like off their service? The privatization of messages. LiveWire has removed the private option as there are circumventions that can be done and messages can still get out. Good idea? Bad idea? The comments so far are good on LiveWire, but I'd like to hear your thoughts. Phone numbers. Is it time to give up giving out your mobile number, finding an alternative number to give to websites? An article says maybe it's time. And there's another article linked discussing this very topic. Caroline Black sent an article called 51 Critical Cyberbullying Statistics in 2019. I come along and talk about it, break down the article, and a link is available on our blog. A quick update on iOS and Mac, as they have both released updates. And finally, a text reminder service. Yes, it's a legitimate domain. The domain and service is called textreminders.xyz. It is a legitimate site. You can go up there and it's completely safe. Learn about it. Let me know what you think, because I'm sure there are people that can utilize such a service. Finally, our contact information will be available at the end. I hope that you will enjoy the program as much as I have putting it together for you. Let's start now with bullying. Is this a disability problem? A 2019 talk. My name is Jared Reimer, and thanks so much for listening. Podcast 310. I want to start out by asking a question. How many of you, whether you're listening to this by telephone, RSS, or streaming, have been deleted from a forum, blog, or telephone line, even though you have not violated any rule set out on the forum, blog, or telephone line, and you were once able to go over there, but yet there was no indication that you had done anything wrong and you got deleted? This happened to me and I felt it was unfair. It was on a telephone line whose administration deleted multiple people in one day for various reasons or another. And the telephone line in question had rules and regulations that you had to agree to as part of the sign-up process. Now, forums, blogs, and other websites where you have to sign up, at least on the websites, there are terms of service that are written in legalese. basically legal language covering them, and they expect you to read it, and it's pages and pages on hand. And we all know that we just don't have that kind of time to read pages and pages, whether it's in a window and it's accessible to us where we can read it, or if you're sighted, you're not going to scroll through the pages to read it. You're just going to click the I agree and continue about your day. I do have a privacy policy on my website at jaredreimer.net. That's JaredReimer.net. And while I want to convey what I'm collecting and what things are collected and the fact that things aren't going to be shared without consent, I try to lay it all out in English. And I have the same type of policy set at menvi.org, menvi.org. Now, being deleted for no reason, to me, and my honest opinion, is bullish behavior. And on one telephone line, they recently got another co-administrator who is pretty much starting to do what the main administrator should have done years ago. There were rules in regards to name tags and other aspects of making sure that the system runs efficiently as possible. Especially, I like the rule with the name tag because of the fact that people know who they're talking to. Music they allowed, but your name had to be in there. And there were a lot of boxes on that system that did not have a name or a handle that you go by. It's similar to a website where they want to know who you are. And you can be anonymous if it allows you, but if it doesn't, you must use a handle that you're happy with so that people can identify you. And rules stipulate whether you're on a phone line or a website, blog, or forum that people must call you by that name. Well, for a number of years, I've been attacked, and it's happened both online and the phone world. I had one guy many, many years ago threaten to come down and break my arm. I learned, although I don't remember how to do it now, how to trace the email headers to find out where it was sent, although I had an idea, but I wanted to see if I was right in case it was forged. I sent the email to Yahoo, and they let me know that that user, I don't remember if it said that it said that they were removed, but that user basically was no longer on Yahoo. They basically said, we took care of it, per our terms. He threatened me, outright threatened to harm me. And the telephone line in question, there have been threats to harm people and do other odds and ends, and a lot of it's let go. But the bullies that run it think it's okay to allow some people to do it and kick people off who have done absolutely nothing. So, this went back to an article that I wrote on vocal.media a long time ago. And I have a question. Do you think that it is a blindness-related problem? Or do you think that this is not a blindness-related problem? And this is one of these times where I think that this is not a problem just with the blind. I wrote the article on longevity.media, and it was posted May 2nd, way back in 2017. And it was tagged as Advice and Humanity. Where do my rights and consequences begin? I read several different books in regards to bullying, and I talk about them in this article, and there are 8 chapters and sort of like a questionnaire, scenarios and so forth. And there's also another book that I read entitled Teen Cyberbullying Investigated, And it was read by the National Library Service, and it was written by a judge by the name of Thomas Jacobs, who did a great job with the book. And one of the people in the book he talked about was one who actually went after me, the current girlfriend that I was dating, along with a very interesting rap sheet. Now, that gentleman has since gotten out of jail and has tried to get on the phone lines, and there were some questions on who he was, and I was willing to tell people. Now, if you want to know more about that particular story, I can give you podcast number 62, way back in 2008 when we were turned loose in regards to Little Hacker Matt. But this guy was blind and basically bullying people around, asking for information, and if you didn't get it, he would have your services shut off, if not worse. Now, the administrators on one system, one of them is blind, and the other sighted. And both of them and their shows have bashing on them. And as I've said on my blog, that's their choice. But does this really put an image of who you are on your good side or your bad side? And the person that deleted me was the sighted one. And the person that trashed me was a sighted one. Now, the one that threatened to break my arm was a blind one. So I've been targeted by multiple people, both blind and sighted, and it could relate in one form or another to bullying. And the Hacker Matt story, even though the book was written way back when, in chapter 5 of this book, should remind you of this. And the entire book talks about various people of different races who've done things and learned that that wasn't okay. It is a complicated subject, and I definitely don't expect people to completely understand it all in one take. Try to treat people as much respect as possible, I write. And I've tried to do that. Even with recent turmoil, I have definitely tried to distance myself from it. Look, if I'm treating you bad, and this is what you're doing for me, then get rid of it and be done with me, right? An argument can get out of hand. It's not always the last word, but it can turn into a physical altercation. And that's at a setting where the two of you are in the same room. Third, don't think that because one chapter dealt with a disabled individual who started trouble at a young age and picked up as he turned 18 doesn't mean that you won't get into the same trouble for what behavior you may have. So, if you're going around hacking phone systems and social engineering people and, you know, swatting people, and you're also cyberbullying people, just because in the chapter of the one book the gentleman Hacker Matt didn't get picked up until he was 18 doesn't mean that you won't. There were people in that particular book that were picked up before they turned 18, if I remember the book correctly. And you can read that on your own time. This is the most important thing that I think that I've ever written. And it still holds true today. The law does not care whether someone with a disability is caught. If it's serious enough, they'll pay for it. And so, no matter the circumstances, if you have a disability, the law doesn't care. There was a longtime person who has been on again, off again this podcast, who has gotten picked up off and on through the years, and the crime involved is very serious. I'm not disclosing anything, but it was serious enough that he spent time in jail. He wasn't a bully. He never bullied anybody. He had been calling phone lines off and on for years. But I point this out because of the fact that eventually the bullies who are doing this and have committed other crimes are definitely going to be picked up. And you're thinking, you know, why does this all matter? Well, how do you think fights start? By somebody doing something to somebody and making them feel threatened. So they attack you. And you have no idea what you even did because they've tried to tell you and you just don't care. So how did you handle such a thing? So what I'd say is this. If you truly believe that somebody should be deleted, no matter if it's a forum, a website, a blog, or a phone line, and you're an administrator, I think what I would do, if I were one, is to call them up or leave them a message and say, look, I'm getting reports of this, and I'd like to know what's going on, and how can we resolve it? Right? That's how I would do it. And give them the opportunity to respond. And if they are vicious and they start bullying you and you feel like you've not gotten anywhere, then by all means, get rid of them. I bet you if the administration came to me and said, we've got a problem, this is what we have, and we think you should be deleted, and I'd say, this is what I think, and whatever you have is this, and you have continued to bring this up, and it doesn't mean anything because I've not violated any rules here. Some of the people that I've gotten to know through the years on the phone lines have treated me well one day and not treated me well others. I recently had similar situations happen recently where somebody who I've gotten to know and they've asked for advice has started treating me unfairly. It's come out of nowhere. I don't know why. They seem to be bullish type. But that's how I handled it. I said, if this is how I'm treating you, then get rid of what you're doing for me and be done with it. So this is something that I think needs to be talked about more. And I was recently sent an email by somebody by the name of Caroline who sent me a link to updated resources and such dealing with cyberbullying, and I just haven't had a chance to read it. But I think about this in recent events, and I honestly think that this is the time to bring this up again, and I'm sure once I get a moment to read the article in question, I will definitely be back with comments on it, because it cannot be talked about it without having some sort of discussion. Bullying, whether it's online or off, we've got to start doing something and talking about how we can make sure that we are as safe as possible on these various platforms that we call into. And I look forward to your thoughts on how we can better maintain our own security, whether it's online or off, when calling or participating on platforms that seem to be on the bullish side with administrators who say they care but do other things. Here's something to ponder or think about. I was going to say think about and then I said ponder, but maybe both are in order for this segment of the Technology Podcast. Livewire, along with other telephone lines and even voicemail systems in general, allow you to mark messages as private, otherwise known as confidential. And in recent times, LiveWire's Amadeus put up an announcement talking about removing the privatization of messages. And this is because technology is so advanced now that there are ways around that privatization of messages. So when you mark a message private in normal circumstances, this makes it immune to it not being able to be shared or forwarded. And as I've said many times before, and I even did it once when doing it by email, but I today would not leave sensitive information in voicemail. Even if I did mark it private, there are risks now involved in making messages private that could be circumvented. For example, there's software such as GoldWave, SoundForge, and WavePad for the PC, and other software for the Mac that allow you to record. And I use GoldWave for this podcast, and I've used GoldWave for my other podcasts that I've done across the network. And of course, if you have the proper setup, which may include but not limited to stereo mix or some other equivalent patching software or hardware, you can take these messages off of any voicemail or bulletin board or other system and unprivatize it. Privatization is gone now from Livewire. I don't expect other systems to follow suit. There is another system that has never had the option to make a message private, and yet there's another one that calls it private, but yet it can also be circumvented the same exact way. And I've gotten to thinking, and a lot of the people on Livewire are saying the same thing. This makes a lot of sense. Privatizing messages don't make sense today. Amadeus said, you can take time and you can look for an app on your iDevice or Android, and you can hold the phone up to a speaker of a telephone or a headset put down to that phone if you call into systems on Skype, tell GoldWave or another recording software to record, do a little bit of editing, and be done. So, how does this work on the internet? Well, frankly, services like Dropbox and the like take advantage of not having things linked unless you ask for them to be. And this way, they protect your data. But once we link a file, and yes, that link is a private link directly to that copy, when it gets out, it is then made available by forwarding or copying and pasting. So those people who do not know about that particular file, whatever it might be, could then get a copy of it, and the only way to fix it is to delete that link on Dropbox. Or Google Drive is another service which offers the same thing. And of course, we talked briefly about file mail and Steve Gibson talked about a service that Firefox has, not necessarily to its browser, but the parent company Mozilla has a link called send.firefox.com, I believe is what it is, but I don't want to say that is the exact link for sure, because I heard of it once, and I looked at it then, and it basically does the same thing. It allows you to upload files. If you sign in to your Firefox account, you can send up to 2.5 gigabytes for free. And it also allows you to password protect that particular file. And it's available for a limited time, anywhere from a day to a week. I've not played with that one, but similar services out there, which include Dropbox, Google Drive, SendSpace is another one, as well as YouSendIt, allow you to share files. And while I was paying for it, I uploaded a ton of stuff, and most of it wasn't shared. A lot of it was, but most of it wasn't. I linked to, let's say, the books podcast on the downloads page, and White Cane Travel was also up there until I got rid of my SendSpace account. It's not totally gone, but I got rid of the pro version because, frankly, you can use Dropbox to share links. And there are other services where you can share stuff and don't have to pay for it. And services like SendSpace, you're limited to 300 megabytes, where you might have a bit of a larger file. And even file mail is good for short-term stuff. And it's larger than the 300 megabyte SendSpace or 100 megabyte YouSendIt limitations. And all of them, if there is no link available, you cannot get to it. But I'm sure that it can be worked around. Just like the voicemail side of phone systems and voicemail services in general, where somebody with some inclination and malicious intent could play around with different URLs, even those that are not private, and come up with some very interesting things that they weren't necessarily looking for. And if the file's private and it's not linked, it would take a malicious hacker, or even not necessarily a hacker, but someone with malicious intent who knew the workings of the service, to get at any file that they wanted. And I've been thinking about this since Amadeus put the message up. And I'm not saying that this is going to be a good idea for everybody, although people really should be using common sense and not forward things that are meant for their ears. There may be messages with sensitive information or meant for one's ears. And honestly, it has come to the point where if you are going to be forwarding that type of thing out and you're not using common sense, then you should not be there. You don't forward out your own voicemail at home where people leave you telephone numbers. So if you get phone numbers or other types of information that only you should be hearing, why are you going to forward it out there? I heard a message on LiveWire where somebody was leaving a message that somebody left them that included their phone number, but yet that person's no longer living. And I was listening to it going, why was that phone number left in there? I would have at least taken the phone number out and edited it so that no personally identifiable information was left. And on top of that, one person gave out this person's full name. And while I am saddened to hear of their passing, I didn't feel that was right to have their full name and their phone number left out on a public bulletin board. That was meant for somebody's ears, not to be forwarded out. Could there be reprehensible damage? I don't know. The person's gone, and maybe the phone number's reassigned, and that could lead to a big problem now. But that's something that I wouldn't do. But with the Unprivatization of messages. This means that the common user needs to use their common sense, just like someone who uses something like Dropbox or Google Drive or SendSpace or other file sharing service would not go looking for files that don't belong to them, and people don't share links that are not meant for others. When I put up the Christmas and holiday collection through SendSpace, I told people and made it a public link, which was to expire in, call it, 30 days. And after that time, anybody who clicked on that link, the file was removed because I told SendSpace to remove the file. The link was still good, but SendSpace made the link invalid by telling people that the file no longer existed. And I tested this also on FileMail, where I linked to segments of the Braille transcription course. And I went to that page, and it said that the file was removed and to ask the sender to resubmit. So this is how they handle expired files. And I think that's the most secure that we have at this current time. So that is my thoughts on this whole privatization of messages and other types of things that could be considered not for the public consumption. And I'm curious on whether you think other voicemail systems, or even your own voicemail system that answers your telephone lines, will eventually get rid of the private option of sending messages. You are welcome to comment at any time by leaving me public feedback if you're listening to this on Livewire. And you can do that by pressing 0 while listening. And it'll prompt you on how to leave your own public feedback. And if you're in the system, my box number is 2276, where if you are in the system, you can press the option to leave me private voicemail. And, of course, on the podcast itself, contact information is made available on the podcast itself as well as the blog. So, let's hear what you have to say. Of the phone number, how should we, as users, better identify ourselves with services? There's been a recent article I started to read and finally did read in regards to the aspect of phone numbers. Each and every one of us have one, and I list one on this very podcast where people can text or WhatsApp message me. But mobile numbers are more and more wanted. And there's an article on Krebs on Security that talks about the mobile phone number and that it would be better to use something like Google Voice to be able to do that type of authentication, where if that number gets out, you can easily change it. Of course, there are services out there like TextNow, which Michael in Indiana and others that I may or may not know have used. And there have been services out there like Gizmo Project and the like that handed out phone numbers for either free or low cost. Skype, I pay $14.23 a quarter for, and recently they claim that you can use it as an SMS-based telephone number, but my testing indicates that I've not been able to successfully do that, or I'm not clear how. But be that as it may, There are lots of things I think we can do. And you can go on Krebs on Security to look up the article dealing with phone numbers. First, I was the victim of an attack where somebody tried to get me to turn over personal information in regards to somebody, and my phone number was found in the Whois directory, which is part of owning a domain. When I told them that I was not interested in turning over that data, they ended up disconnecting my phone number, which cut off my service to the house. The phone company did not confirm or deny whether there was a hack, just said that there was a technical problem and turned me back on. I still think today that my number was hacked into by the particular individual. If you would like a copy of podcast number 62 where that particular story was given, please feel free to contact me, and I will be sure to get you a copy of that program through a file sharing service. I think nowadays I am using Skype or Google for a phone number, unless it's a business. Then I've been known to give some of them my phone number, especially for text messages, although I could hand out my Google Voice just the same. I also think that probably having one number for everything would be a good idea. I know one person who has reportedly had multiple numbers through the years, and what they had done was get out their Google number for everything. And if they change their main number, they don't have to give out their number to anybody because the main number is Google. As I said, there are other services out there. Some are paid, some are free, and some may have just a yearly cost where you pay for that for the year, and you definitely could do that too. So, what else can we do? Well, part of the problem is that we have to worry about two-factor authentication, whether it's SMS-based or app-based. More and more services are going the app-based route, but SMS is better than no authentication at all. I think what I would do if I had to do it over again is to give out my Google Voice number for those things that need SMS verification. And according to the bottom of the article, Google published a help article on disabling your number for two-factor authentication for G Suite. G Suite is now the new name for all of Google's products. I am thinking that at some point, app authenticators and services moving to those services are going to overrule the phone number at some point or another. Is it going to happen right now? Probably not. Steve Gibson has also worked on Squirrel, grc.com/sqrl, to learn more about it. It is supposed to be a one-time authentication method for identity management. And each website has its own unique key. It's not widely known yet, but if you've listened to Security Now, this has been talked about. When it's released to the public, I'm sure there'll be a full-blown podcast on it, and I can't wait to see how they're gonna demo it. There may be other types of things we can do as well to better minimize the risk of our phone numbers getting out to the hands of the wrong people. We can trust business to try and do the best that they can to protect our phone numbers. Sure, they may get out, and sure, mistakes happen. But I'm thinking that it may be time that we do two-step authentication with apps, not SMS, unless there's no other way. And if there is no other way, then we should use another service outside of our mobile provider. Again, the article is on Krebs on Security, and it is a very fascinating read in an interview style. Why phone numbers stink as identity proof. I found it of interest, and you can search it out through Krebs on Security's website. What are your thoughts? Do you agree with the aspect that phone numbers are just difficult? Or do you think that there is nothing to worry about? I think we should at least think about it. And now is not the time to decide whether it's a good idea to completely switch away from our mobile phone numbers. But it is more of a thought piece than forcing people to make change. Your thoughts are welcome. As talked about in an earlier segment on this podcast, I was sent an article in regards to bullying. And I finally had a chance to read this article, and it is quite interesting. The first segment talked about bullying and whether it's a disability problem, a 2019 talk. But now it's time to talk about some statistical stuff. The article, which I've also published to the blog, and I will be letting the person know about the posting so that it can be shared. The person's name who submitted it to me sent it on the 12th, and her name is Caroline Black. The article is entitled 51 Critical Cyberbullying Statistics. This type of bullying, known as cyberbullying, is done through SMS, otherwise known as text messaging, Facebook, Twitter, or other social media. It occurs around the clock, and it tends to be more permanent because things that are posted online tend to stay there. Cyberbullying is difficult to spot. Unlike in person, this can occur in complete silence. In Australia, 1 in 10 adults have been victims of cyberbullying. In the United States, 40% of adults have recently experienced some sort of bullying or harassment in the last 30 days. And 75% seen cyberbullying occurring around them. So, 40% experience some form of harassment. Another list says 69% of people report having done something abusive to others online. 15% admit to being the perpetrator. Over half of students who identify themselves as lesbian, gay, or transgendered, otherwise known as LGBTQ, have experienced cyberbullying at some point. LGBTQ has recently been talked about in the last several years, where people with that identity claim to be somebody else. And I have never said anything, but I think we should respect that aspect of life. Girls are more to be victim than boys. 36% of girls compared to 26% of boys, have been cyberbullied. 83% of those who have been cyberbullied have also been bullied in person. And it doesn't take much to notice. People who have been cyberbullied or bullied in general stay away from the technology or people who have done such a thing. Cyberbullying is much more powerful than the standard in-person bullying. There could be short-term or long-term effects in regards to this particular topic. There are some troubling statistics. 64% of people who have been cyberbullied say it affects their ability to learn or feel safe at school. Students who experience cyberbullying are more likely to adjust in school as well as have mental health issues. There are problems like headaches and stomach aches in children, and students who have been bullied will have twice as likely of an experience of these symptoms. 19% of bullied students say the experience has a negative impact. People who have been bullied become shy and withdrawn, be moody, agitated, anxious, or stressed out, act more aggressively towards others, protest more about going to school. This would probably be more for children than adults, but it would not surprise me if it was adults as well. Get into trouble at school, skip school altogether, experience a different academic performance, stop using the computer or other devices, as said above, change eating or sleeping habits to get away from everybody. This means that sleeping during the day and doing their work at night, attempt self-harm or suicide, and suddenly beginning to hang out with a new set of friends or people they've not hung out with before. It's tricky to determine who's engaging in cyberbullying. Children or adults who are engaging in cyberbullying will stop using their computer or phone when someone comes near, look nervous or jumpy when online, be secretive about what they're doing online, spend an excessive amount of time online, become angry or upset when the internet's taken away, and this could be more with children than adults. Around 81% of kids think that bullying is easy to get away with online. 90% of kids who see cyberbullying report it. However, there are 84% of students report having seen someone, would tell somebody to stop what they're doing. This means that a small group of people are speaking out against this behavior. As an adult, you can do the following if you see a kid being cyberbullied. Ask your child for an overview of their contact list, messaging apps, and the like. Talk to your kids about cyberbullying so that they know and how to understand what is the issue and how to spot the signs so they can get help. Emphasize to them that they will not lose their internet privileges if they tell you about what is happening, if they feel pressured to do something or are cyberbullied. Raise the issues with the children's teachers and then address the issue the best you can. Reach out to their friends. Those being cyberbullied have options too. You should go over what they should be doing. Here's what you can do if you've been cyberbullied. Tell someone you trust so that you can get help. Keep emails, texts, and the like that could be evidenced. Don't strike back. Two wrongs don't make a right. And I didn't strike back when I was being talked about on a recent show on a telephone line. I left it alone. In fact, when I responded to a voicemail as said in the last podcast, I said it's more than likely this, and this has probably gone around for many years, and sadly, I'm surprised it's still going around, and I'm sorry that you had to hear it. Report the issue to the website, including Facebook and YouTube, who have forms in place to report such things securely. This is a real issue, and it's not just a U.S. issue. There's also issues around the world. However, I don't feel we're helpless. The more we talk about this and the more we bring it to somebody's attention, the more likely that this can be stopped before somebody eventually gets hurt. There have been stories on the internet off and on for years, including children committing suicide because someone told them to go do this, and they saw it online. So what did they do? They went and gone and killed themselves. And then the children who did it felt bad. But I understand there has not been any consequence, or if there was, the consequences have already been done. So, I've linked to this on the blog. Again, 51 critical cyberbullying statistics in 2019. An article submitted to me by someone by the name of Caroline Black. And I hope that you enjoy reading the article, and let's learn together what we can do. We can't do it alone. iOS, Mac, and other Apple devices may have updates. AppleVis has information on iOS and Mac. iOS seems to have an important Braille fix, where Braille was not tracked correctly when typing using calling methods. They called it RTE. I've never heard of it. So, I'm not completely sure what that is. There are other emojis and other stuff that have been added. A post on the blog for iOS and Mac updates is available on the blog at technology.jaredrimer.net. Welcome back to the podcast. There is a service that I want to talk about. I'm not going to sit and demo it because I want you to check it out for yourself. But I promised them that I would talk about them, and we'll see if it drums up some business. Yes, I said business because the service is not free. But the pricing is very affordable. I was asked by these people to check it out, and I was intrigued by the name. I had been looking for a service that would be free, that would allow me to continue to send specific items to my text messaging. And while this service is not free, I did help this company out with some accessibility stuff when I went to go take a look to see what they have to offer. They do have shortcut keys on their website which work, and I believe we have fixed every accessibility issue that I could find. There is a free service when you first sign up, which gives you a certain amount of credits. So it is similar to a prepaid service. You can use it as you see fit. I don't remember offhand what we agreed for a limit for the free service. Some services give you 5 to 7, and I said to the people behind this, you know what? I think it would be good to have this many reminders or this many days, whichever comes first. The fact of the matter is that I was only suggesting, and of course they could either take or leave my suggestion. There have been also some other issues where reminders were not sent and they ended up being delivered after those issues were taken care of. Again, I want to stress that the service followed me on Twitter and I was pretty intrigued. I will talk about what they offer, talk about the prices, and give you the website. I'll give you the website now, and I'll give you the website at the end. The website is textreminders.xyz. Why the XYZ name? I'm not 100% sure, but it is legitimate. I have used it. It works. And I have found it to be very valuable at times. There was one day I actually set 2 reminders. One to leave a certain place. And when I got to one location, another text message saying what I could do, because I set it up in advance after checking on some things before I had gone for that particular day. The reminder service does not limit you to 160 characters. I believe the limit, if I remember correctly, is 255 characters. So you have a little bit more room. A lot of the other services I've used, including Reminder Guru and Snoozster and others, are tied to the 160 character limit. I was a little suspicious when I first came across textreminders.xyz because I've never heard of a domain, and usually you want to be suspicious of those. But I can tell you that I looked at it carefully. And by the way, you cannot get to it by going to www.textreminders.xyz. It has to be HTTP. So, when you go there, you are presented with a web page for signing up, logging in, pricing, contact, and they describe what you can do. They recently then added, while I was working with them, the capability of contacts, and you can buy additional contacts as well. The default number is 1. The pricing is very simple. It seems as though the website still shows 7 reminders for free. And of course, I said that they might want to raise it, but I don't know if they have or haven't. 10 reminders, $2 at 20 cents a message. 50 reminders is $5 or 10 cents a message, 200 reminders, $15 is 75 cents a message, and 500 reminders is $25 at 5 cents a message. So, I'm going to go ahead and hit Alt-Shift-4 for the dashboard because I'm already logged in. That would allow you to sign in if you are not a member. We had been working on the dashboard, and it's a lot more accessible because it was quite confusing before. You can buy reminders from here, and I have 85 reminders left to use. It used to show how many reminders and the percentage of those that were left. But they had made a change that if a screen reader is active, that all you get, for simplicity's sake, is how many reminders you have left. Now, I registered it with my cell phone, and there was some complications with the verification, but it was verified. Like I said, this is a growing pain, right? It lists your phone number. You can toggle the sidebar. There was an unlabeled button, and the sidebar has options for your account. You can get support. You have access to some account options, including time zone settings and password changing. Contacts. I did add one contact, and right now that's my limit, and I don't need any more. You can buy reminders right here. You can earn reminders by sharing the service on Facebook. You can create a new reminder or view all reminders. The All Reminders screen shows you what particular reminders are out there and whether they have been delivered and who it's delivered to. Myself would be you. Otherwise, it would have the name of the contact. The date for the reminders can be entered as 03/26/19, and the time can be entered in military time, such as 13:00 or 1:25 p.m. as examples. We made sure that there was text labels for the edit boxes, and we're trying to figure out who might be interested in the service. I know I am, because of the fact that there are sometimes it's just better to receive a reminder through text messaging, especially when you're gone, and not have to set up all these reminders on your iOS device. I find the service of value. My goal here is not to sit here and demo it, but to tell you about this cool, awesome service. Again, it's a web application, very well done. The website again is Text Reminders, TextReminders.xyz, and it is a legitimate service. It absolutely works. If you end up using it, send them an email and tell them that Jared sent you. And let them know what you think. They are interested in your feedback. It's time for contact information, everybody. You can email, iMessage, or text. You can also send a WhatsApp message. And did you know that you could leave public feedback as well? When you dial 631-403-1002 and you punch in my box number to listen to any of the shows, including this one, when you press the button to leave public feedback, simply let me know that you would like me to air the public feedback, and I can get it onto the show with your permission. Email, iMessage, tech, that's T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. Text or WhatsApp, 804-442-6975. And, of course, the public feedback line, 631-403-1002. And my mailbox on LiveWire is 2276. And if you're listening through LiveWire's platform, leave me private feedback. And the same applies. If you would like me to utilize that feedback, please let me know. And you can also call me using the 804 phone number that is listed above. I hope that each and every one of you enjoys the podcast, and I'll see you again on another edition of the program. Till then, thanks for listening.